This is the Sit Down with Olwethu Lishabane, a podcast for women everywhere who are exploring the art of superwoman.
So, Zozi, I mean, I think everybody wants to know this question.
I'm screwed.
So, do you wash dishes when you go home?
does
Miss Universe wash dishes?
I definitely do. I wash dishes. I have three sisters who would kill me if I didn't do my turn in washing dishes. And my mom doesn't play that game. So.
Oh, my goodness. So, like, Miss Universe, literally. So, okay, wait. So do you wash dishes as in like you wash, then this one, do you do the whole deal of washing the dishes, wiping and packing inside the cupboard?
Well, for one, there's no Miss Universe at home, so it starts there. Let's establish that. But then, the whole shabam, wash dishes, put them back where they're supposed to be, the whole thing.
So you don't even get, mm-hmm. I thought maybe one day when I'm made.
Nobody cares.
Same beginning.
Nobody cares. Imbi.
Wow. Today we're joined by a Miss Universe like no other. A woman who has completely changed the face of beauty globally. And also we talk about her activism, her global impact, and the way that she has flipped the switch on how we view the global standard of beauty. She is the perfect representation of our own global ambassador from Africa to the world. Let's go have this conversation with Zozi Mbeni. Thing we should be teaching young girls today is leadership. It's something that has been lacking in young girls and women for a long time. Not because we don't want to, but because of what society has labeled women to be. I think we are the most powerful beings in the world and that we should be given every opportunity. That is what we should be teaching young girls, to take up space. Do these words sound familiar? The phrase take up space gained momentum in 2019 on the world stage of Miss Universe, uttered by our very own Zozi Mbeni Thunzi. We watched her get crowned as Miss South Africa before she jetted off to represent us, making history as she served the longest reign in her role as Miss Universe. Zozi recently took her final walk on the global stage and is back in the country. So what's next for this chapter of her life? We find out on today's edition of the Sit Down Lifestyle. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much. You just literally put your name in the history books after the longest reign as Miss Universe.
17 months to be exact.
Did that come with a lot of pressure?
It did. It came with so much pressure. 17 months to be exact. It was supposed to be 12. It's usually 12. But because of the pandemic, we had to, prolong it. And, a lot of people saying, let us stay on for 2 years. And I was like, I don't know if she wants to stay for 2 years, It's something that must be done within that year. Mm. It was, one of the proudest and most incredible times of my life. But I was so happy to, to be able to say this was it. I did the best that I could in the time that I could. And now ready to, move on to other things.
What were some of the pressures of being Miss Universe?
I mean... Well, for one, if you are somebody who was living, for lack of a better word, a normal life, waking up every day, going to work, and going to school in the evenings, that was pretty much my life. And then, a whole 360 happens in a matter of minutes, people start following you. And I think the biggest pressure comes from people want to know, what is she doing? Yay. What is she doing it with? How is she doing it? What is she saying? All of those things. Now, all of a sudden, you have to kind of think in a way that people are watching and they're always just trying to, see what you're getting up to. So I think for me, that was the biggest shift and struggle at the beginning and understanding that my life is not really just my life anymore. Mm. But the whole world is looking through it with a fine-tooth comb.
And coming out of Miss South Africa first, and then going to the global stage, and it happened so quickly.
So quickly, it's wild.
Miss South Africa within a few months, you were at Miss Universe. And then it was like, whoa, you know, now I am Miss Universe. You know, that quickness in how, you know, you rose up, did that come as a shock to you? Or did you always know I was destined for this?
That's such a good one. You know, there's nothing natural about your life changing in a split second. And so, you know, psychologically, mentally, emotionally, it does something to you. So it is quite shocking in the moment that it happens. But to answer your question about, you know, purpose and destiny, absolutely. I'm someone who strongly believes that we, you know, all come into the world with a certain purpose to, you know, do certain things. And I've always really believed that my life, yes, is mine, but it should serve more than just you know, myself, but others as well. And so I kind of always knew that I wanted to do something that way. I didn't know it would be Miss South Africa. I didn't know it would be Miss Universe, but I knew it would be something.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure this question has been asked to you multiple times. You didn't just, you know, enter Miss SA and then become Miss SA. Mm. You had entered before.
Yes,
and then
yes,
a couple of years later, you entered again, and then you won. And the first time you entered, you had a different look to entering the second time. And there's something magical about being your most authentic self. There's something magical about being, you know, just kind of taking ownership of who you are and just being like, whether they receive it or not, this is who I am. Did you have that moment when you entered the second time?
I did. The question of my hair, because first when I did it in 2017, it was with a weave on, different look. And then I came back 2019 with my hair. Initially, I had my hair short for 4 years or 3 years, even before I came to Miss South Africa.
Yes.
And so I had been having that hair for a while. So 2017, 18, 19, it was 2 years because I cut it literally after I did Miss South Africa the first time. So I got the big chop and I was just enjoying my hair that way, decided to enter Miss South Africa again. And a question came of whether or not would I put on a weave, you know, going back from, you know, people surrounding me with, if I told someone I was trying again, they were like, so are you going to, you know, do it with your hair? Now, genuine questions, not people trying to be like, you know, malicious in any way. And it made me really think because I was like, no, like, why should I now all of a sudden, because this is how I've been having my hair for the past 2 years, I've been enjoying it this way. If I change my hair, then it means I don't think it should be on a Miss South Africa stage. And so I decided to keep it, you know, that way. Did it make a difference that I had, you know, the shorter hair than I did? Because I know that's a question that people ask. Do you think the hair was a part of the reason why you won? Although it's not completely, because, you know, I'm more than just my hair.
Yeah.
You know, I stand for so many different things. But looking at the zeitgeist of where we are, you know, the movement with, you know, black excellence, black beauty, and how much we are, you know, trying to move forward as Africans, it did help, definitely. And so I'm happy that it did. You know, if women can look at it and say, we can be whoever we want to be, and still be, I'm Miss South Africa, then absolutely, you know, I don't see why not.
I mean, now you have young girls walking into salons, like I said earlier on, saying, I want to Sozi.
So, I mean, I didn't even know it was called
a
Sozi,
but
it's
you must ask. Now that you're back home, you must ask.
But you know what's funny? Because people were calling me, you know, like, babes are goile, emondi. Like, at the barber shop, your face is just like this.
Yes.
So that was very funny.
I mean, I have the same haircut underneath here.
As you should. What do you do when you get to your barber? Are you like, hit
no,
me with
I'm
that?
I'm just like, yeah, hit me with that. Yeah. Hit me with it. Let's do this.
That is so funny.
For real. I'm not even joking. But I mean, the realities are that pageantry is very misconceived, right?
Of course, yes.
And there are so many ideas people have of pageantry and this idea that women objectify themselves and put themselves on stages to be looked at and to be these kind of bodies, you know, to be, you know, to look at and adorned. But how does the international stage really amplify the work that one does? And how does it amplify the politics and the kind of statements one wants to make on a global stage?
Yeah. Well, for one, actually, I want to say to those people who say women come on stage to flaunt themselves, if that's why a woman is doing it, then so what? If that's what she wants to do, you know, I feel like she should. But there's so many reasons why people enter pageants. I mean, for one, when I entered Miss South Africa, I never looked at it and was like, I am the most beautiful woman in South Africa. I'm going to do this. For me, it was mainly looking at it as a leadership platform and a leadership position. You know, like you said, the things that we do say influence, you know, the world in one way or another. And I've seen these women come before me, whether it was through Miss South Africa or Miss Universe. People listen, you know, when they talk. They have this huge following. And so I thought to myself, you know, this would be a best way to tackle, you know, some of the social issues that I feel are important to me. And so for me, it was a way to say I can be a leader in my own right, which is why I did it. So yes, to answer your question, not only in South Africa, but internationally as well, you know, you become Miss Universe and people want to know what your views are on certain things. They want to know what you are getting up to today. So yes, definitely pageants have shifted. Miss Universe, for one, started as a swimsuit contest, and that's all it was. But as time went by, it evolved and became something more. And I think it's because of the women that come onto the platform, they keep changing it and shifting it into what they want it to be. So, you know, a woman who comes after me in the next one will come and make of it what they want to make of it.
Yeah, and I mean, you've lent your voice to causes such as Black Lives Matter, against racial inequality in the world. And there are so many other, you know, causes that you lend your voice to. Do you think there's a huge surge of people just getting fatigued of, you know, speaking out against injustices such as perhaps racial injustice, you know, gender-based violence, and we don't have a follow-through? How do we just maintain that follow-through?
Yeah, it's such a difficult one, and I know people are tired. I know I'm tired, for one, of being able to say, I'm a woman. Please don't kill me. You know, I'm a black person. Please don't racially profile me or be racist towards me. It's tiring. It's tiring because I too want to wake up and just be a human being and live. But unfortunately, we are, you know, at a time where it is very important to use our voices to challenge the status quo, to challenge the powers that be, for lack of a better word. And so that's why I do it. And that's why I always urge people to join in with their voices as well. And to also tell them that you don't have to be a Miss South Africa or a Miss Universe to actually, you know, try to make a change. It doesn't matter how many people are listening to you. You don't have to be on a world stage. And it starts with the smallest things as your backyard. During a braai, what are people saying there at a workplace? You know, what's the language that they're using to speak to women and to speak about black people? And so, yes, we're tired, we're fatigued, we're all of those words, but I hope that we never get tired. I hope we never get tired.
And you led a campaign as well. One of the campaigns you lent your voice to was a Miss South Africa campaign of love letters during your reign as Miss South Africa.
Yes.
What are some of the things that stood out for you during that campaign, particularly, where men were basically contributing towards the issues of gender-based violence?
You know, the one thing I will say were how much strong women are. Words like strong came out a lot. Strength came out a lot. And I don't want to lie. It bothered me to some extent because, you know, this is how women are perceived to be. And so to say women are always strong and the word strength means they can take so much more of hurt and pain. And so for me, I really would like for women to be looked at as more than just, you know, the rock of the family, the one who can take on, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just don't want to be strong. I don't want to be described as that. I want to be vulnerable. In fact, you know, I want to just be. And so those are some of the strong messages that came in. And yeah, they did bother a little bit, but it was also nice to see those messages that were, you know, just in support of women. And hopefully we get to see a lot of that, a lot of men engaging in the conversation. And when I say men engaging in the conversation, it's not necessarily to say that their words matter the most, because, you know, we need to put women
up front and center, because this is a time where we have to be listening to women. And yeah, it's been interesting social issues and campaigns that I've been a part of, and I'm hoping to continue with that even after Miss Universe. It doesn't stop. It doesn't stop.
And whilst you were actually reigning as Miss Universe, you lent your voice as well to the UN. And I'm sure you're aware of some of the stats in that women perform 66% of the global work.
Yes.
But yet we only, and we also produce 50% of the food in the world, but we only earn 10% of the income. And we only own 1 to 2% of property in the world.
How?
So, I mean, I've always believed that we need to find ways in which women should be disenfranchised, you know, in terms of acting in the, on the international stage and also acting in terms of the international work that needs to be done. What do you think kind of roles such as faces like yours and being on international stage and raising these issues and saying to women, take up space, how much of an impact does it make? Because I think we sit here at home, we still see the numbers of rise for gender-based violence. We kind of still see ourselves slump back when you sit around the boardroom tables. But there's this yearning to want to take up space. How much more work do you think needs to be done, especially by voices?
Yeah, a whole lot of work, which is why I'm always happy to be here, you know, urging women to take up space. Because like you said, sometimes it's that little push that, you know, certain women need to say, actually, here we are. We see you. We hear you. We know that you're capable. So, you know, now step up to the plate, because sometimes we can be our, you know, our worst enemies, our worst critics. And so on that part, on that front, it is important to have women who are constantly, you know, creating this community of support around each other and using our voices, like you said, you know, to pull up these women and to say, you know, we can definitely achieve this. But on the other side of things, unfortunately, sometimes it's not women. Most of the times it's not women. You know, we need to be speaking to, you know, all these corporate spaces. We need to be speaking to leadership, because what are the world leaders doing about what's happening right now, especially to women? So I think that's where the work needs to be done. And honestly, I think the biggest problem to having 10% of, you know, the stats that you just gave, the biggest problem is that the world system, not just in South Africa, actually, but just the world, is created on such a patriarchal system. It has been for so many years. And in order for us to move forward and start empowering women, we have to start dismantling the systems that were put forward, you know, to raise up the men and not so much the women. So dismantle the patriarchy first, and then maybe we can have a little bit of a shift in all the stats that you just mentioned.
Having been now on a global stage as an African woman and a South African woman and returning back home, there's often this idea of, you know, us being seen as victims, as African women, almost removing our agency, right? As if we're just cogs in the work of this global system. You know, what impact have you seen in perhaps even yourself in being seen as this African woman who's kind of a victim of just the system that doesn't allow her to thrive, and how it just removes your agency to be, to live, to...
Yeah, another tough one, because like I said, sometimes you just want to wake up and be, like you said. But one thing though I'm grateful for is the African women that are actually out there changing the narrative and rewriting the story and telling it in our own voices, because I think that's like the one way that we can shape and shift how people see us and view us, because most of the time, people outside of Africa and people who aren't women like to tell the story for us. And so in order for us to make sure that the perceptions are shifted, we need to take back what is ours and to take back our stories, which is why I'm always as African as possible, if that's the word. It's something that comes naturally to me that I will never change about myself, just to show people, you know, as well about who we are. And I've seen so many other African women, not just in South African women, who are out there internationally, you know, doing amazing things as Africans and showing who we truly are. And I don't know how many conversations you have, Olu, with people outside, you know, people in other continents and other countries, and, you know, African people of the diaspora. Africa is where it's at right now. It's where, like, literally people are looking in, and we've always known. We've always known how great we are. But I feel like the world is only waking up now and sort of, like, peeking into, you know, our greatness and who we are. So, yes, it definitely helps having, you know, women who are in these spaces actually rewriting the story and telling it in our own words.
Mm. And how do you wear then the hat? Because you're kind of, not kind of, you are an ambassador and a global ambassador for us as South Africa and Africa now. How do you wear the hat of the global ambassador, but still wear, and I ask it in not how, as in, you know, to kind of be like flippant on how, but how do you wear that global hat as an ambassador and still wear the community hat of on the ground? This is the work that needs to be done.
I don't know if I'm understanding your.
So in the practical sense. We know the real work that needs to be done on the ground.
Yeah.
But there's still the global hat that needs to be worn of how to represent your globe, your continent and your country. How do you balance the two out?
For me, I think one can't exist without the other. They actually go, you know, hand in hand for me. It's like doing on the ground work is actually... It is the global work, which is why I like to tell people that I don't even like dividing myself, you know, having this kind of Zozi and that kind of Zozi. It must always be like an embodiment of one thing to me. And so that's how I kind of balance it. It becomes easy for me if I look at them as coexisting and not being able to have, you know, one without the other. So I don't know if I'm
And then the Zozi, that's also not just a South African girl, but also the Zozi who's a global citizen in the sense that you're not only representing the girl here.
Yeah.
But the girl in Colombia.
Absolutely.
The girl in Mexico. The girl in China.
Yeah.
She sees you as her representative too.
Yeah, that's true. And it is. It is a tough one. But it becomes easy when you are true to yourself and when you are true to your story. Because who you are doesn't necessarily impact only people who look like you, but other people as well who can find, you know, pieces of themselves within you and within your story. And so, you know, I'll give an example of, you know, when I said I want young women and girls to look at me and see their faces reflected in mine, that can be dissected in so many ways. You know, my story and my Miss Universe journey doesn't really apply to only black girls, but each and everyone can take from that. Mm-hmm. So whether you are someone who's underrepresented in society, whether you are a minority or whether you are like an underdog, you can still take from that story and say, actually, it doesn't matter what my social class is, it doesn't matter where I come from, it doesn't matter what my race is. I have been underestimated before, but this person's story actually shows me that I can too. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a catch-22 situation, but it works that way.
And I mean, what were some of the biggest culture shocks? Obviously, you didn't get quite a lot of time to travel within your reign because of lockdown and the global lockdowns. But what were some of the biggest cultural shocks that you kind of went through during that time?
Again, difficult one, I guess, because I didn't really get to be there and travel a lot to be able to see that. I will definitely say meeting people and them being like, are you... really like from Africa? And I'm like, what do you guys think it is there? And so I think for me, it was the whole, you come from South Africa and it is this melting pot of diversity. And then you get to these places that sometimes lack, you know, that diversity. And it's almost like a one tone or like a one street situation. And so when you get asked questions like that, it makes me, you know, I'm taken aback a little because being the South African girl that I am, I'm used to so much diversity and, you know, all these different things. And so when they ask that for them, it's like they have kind of this one idea of how things look. And so I think that's one thing that was very, you know, shocking to me before, how people are actually not well informed about the outside. You know, people only know what they want to know about themselves and are not curious about the outside world. Whereas for me, I'm like, I feel like Africans and South Africans are always, you know, on it with understanding other countries, with understanding how the world works. And so it was a little bit of a culture shock to see people not really being concerned about what's happening outside of their own bubble.
And was it ever kind of a big shock in just understanding blackness in the global context?
It's so interesting that you say that, because sometimes you would go on Twitter and see comments like, oh, you know, there's Africans and then there's African Americans, and that's two completely different blacks. Mm. You know, for me, it's always like mind-boggling to come across, you know, things like that. And so it was very interesting for me to learn what makes us the same and what makes us different. And it's conversations like that that make me realize how colonization and slavery did a big number on black people. Because when I look at black people, I see people who are the same, and I feel like we should see people who are the same because we've been through similar struggles. But I think the first thing that happened during slavery and colonization was to, you know, pit us against each other. It was divide and conquer. It's like a psychology that has happened for years, which is why, even now, sometimes we don't get along. You see Africans fighting with African Americans. We see things like xenophobia. We see things like tribalism. Because these are things that were encoded in people's minds from a long time ago, that if we want to bring them apart, we need to make sure that they are fighting. Like I said, divide and conquer. And so it's been interesting to see how that has messed us up in so many ways globally as black people.
Global scale, hectic.
Absolutely. And so I'm hoping we can actually get to a place where we're like, guys, actually, we're on the same side.
Yeah.
We're on the same side, you know? Yeah. And so that was very interesting to learn, because I've always come from a South African context of, you know, our colonization, apartheid, and now to be able to see, you know, slavery
other side of it.
And the other side of things was very, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you studied journalism, right?
PR, public relations.
And in your studying public relations, how has that contributed to your journey?
A lot, a lot, especially, again, with understanding the world, and being able to sit and converse like this, sometimes I'm like, thank God I have, you know, thank God I have that background, because a part of doing PR is having a worldly understanding of certain things. And so it has helped a lot. Curiosity as well comes with, you know, studying, you know, public relations. Yeah. And so there's so many things that I have taken from my studies. So it wasn't a complete waste, mom and dad. I didn't go to school.
Were they against it at first?
No. They were not against it at all. But it's just that thing of they finish school first.
Okay.
You know, I think it's a parent thing. It's safe to say they want to say, we know you want to go and do certain things, but graduate first. And then we can see what happens after that.
So they're like,
they're like, you know what? But let me tell you, when I was done, because I was doing my postgrad as I was doing Miss South Africa.
Okay.
And so when I won, I kind of, you know, didn't complete that. So I win Miss South Africa. I win Miss Universe. And my parents still have,
so they're like, still like,
so are you going to go back and finish? I'm like, first of all, I just won. Did you guys not see that I just became Miss Universe? So parents are... It was hilarious.
I asked you in the locker room whether you wash dishes. Did you do your own washing at home?
I do. Like I said, nobody. I'll give you pure examples. I wake up, you know, one morning and looking ashy, like I just woke up, like I'm home. And my little sister looks at me and she's like, yeah, do they know that this is you? You know, pure prime example. My mom, I have to make her tea. It's your turn to cook today. And people get mad. They're like, well, you haven't touched the pot since you got here. They don't care. They don't care for me. They don't care. It's nothing to them.
And I love how your little sister trolls you.
She is my biggest troll in life.
I love how your little sister trolls
you. She's my biggest troll in life. Like she, yeah, no.
And I mean, you have kind of, I think your family has kind of been adopted by the nation, right?
No.
How do they take to it in this, like, they're kind of, your dad's kind of, I like mean, the global dad. Like
my dad is like
dad,
such a superstar.
Like Mr. Universe.
Mr. Universe is such a superstar. It's very interesting because my life changed, but then it was, I had to realize that it wasn't just my life that changed. My whole family's lives, you know, have been changed as well. A conversation with my big sister earlier on was like, yo, now we can't even do things. We can't even be out there because they're like, isn't that Zazie's sister? Now, next thing, I'm in the papers for, you know, being out there. So it's been different as well for them because I've kind of had to change a little bit of their lifestyle. It's not drastic, but you know, just people are watching because if should anything happen, that's what happens. They're like, Zazie's sister is in the papers doing this. Zazie's mom was, you know, doing this and that. So it's been interesting to see their lives change as well.
Do you also feel as if, you know, there's always a lot of pressure around, you know, being Miss Universe and being on a global stage, but did you feel also a little bit of a sense of relief in that majority of your reign you spent kind of being at home and still advocating for what you wanted to advocate for, but in a controlled space?
Yeah,
is there a little bit of
actually,
relief to that?
Actually, yes, you are right in a little, especially because I'm this homebody and wanting to be home. It was a relief to be like, oh, so I don't have to go out today. I can just like do this from home. So absolutely, it did help. And I think it also gave me time to be still because I think it's something that we forget to do from time to time.
But you still made this big impact, which
Thank
was
you.
Insane
Thank you.
Because it
Thank
was
you.
Like, you did it in such a controlled way. You still managed your messaging, you managed to get your advocacy across, but in such stillness.
I'm happy you said that because I was hoping, you know, that's what would happen. Because when the pandemic hit, it was like stressful for everyone, for myself. You know, how am I going to do my job? But then I came to realize and to remind myself that Zazie actually being Miss
for
Universe.
For such a time as this.
It's, you know, absolutely. And I was like, being Miss Universe, it's not just about the travel. The biggest part actually about being Miss Universe is the heart of the job. It's the impact. What are you doing with the platform? And so I had to remind myself of that. And that's how I got myself out of that funk of, oh my goodness, I'm not going to be in a flight flying to anywhere, you know? And then I was fine after that.
And you know what was so insane? You know, you took up this role. And I say took up, even though you were placed there, judges, you know, picked you. You were placed in this role and when, you know, that messaging, take up space, resonated with so many women, especially mothers like myself who are parenting through a pandemic, having to juggle the cooking,
girl,
the cleaning,
first
the
of
kids,
all, let me say congratulations to
career,
all of you.
The career, you know, all these moms were literally what resonated in our heads as we tackled our careers whilst fulfilling all these roles. We're literally just like, we're just here to take up space.
Yeah.
Because
and
we
so
were
gracefully.
Seen more during this global pandemic. I won't lie. We were seen more because we were able to do it all with such grace. So that messaging for me was like, came at the right time. You know, and they say for such a time as this, that was just it. And this brings me to then the next question is, what kind of social work and social impact work will you be doing whilst back in South Africa?
I'm so excited to continue, for one, my relationship with the UN Women, to see what we can do now outside of, you know, being Miss Universe. But for me, it will, excuse me, remain the same. My people have always been women and children, and I feel like that is who I will continue to be even outside of Miss Universe, because that's who I was before I won Miss Universe. And I almost said something that I haven't announced yet, but there's also that coming. I mean, it comes with the social work as look at you asking for scoops. For me, humanitarian work is such an important part of who I am. It goes hand in hand with purpose. Like I said, it's very important, I feel, for me to not only just exist for myself, but to also use this, you know, big life that I have been given to just contribute, you know, to society and to my country. And so I will definitely be continuing with work for women and children in that space.
Yeah. And do you have any interest in giving us any music anytime soon?
I know, it's like, drop the album, sis. When are you dropping the album? I know. Not an album. I don't have an album dropping. I don't want people living this interview and they're like, well, you said
you're going to give us an album.
No, I don't have that coming up right now. Yeah. Is the word.
I'm just hoping for like a Disney princess, like...
Right.
Theme song.
Disney
princess, like
Disney
collab, you know?
Also, you never know.
Into the universe,
you never
like,
know. You will put it out there
Disney
in the universe.
Disney princess role.
I hope Disney call us. Which cat would Disney? Come on. But yes, we'll see what happens with the music side of things. But I'm very excited to explore that. I can definitely say that I will be going into that territory one way or the other. But I want to ease my way into it. I don't want to feel the pressure to now be like, you know, jumping into that. So I'll ease myself into it and see how that works out.
And can you give us a tease on anything you're working on right now?
It's such a difficult time to even like say anything because you know it's that stage of we're in the talks, the signing of NDAs, signing of contracts. Next thing, I'm being sued even before stuff happens. So nothing I can share as of yet. But as soon as it happens, you guys will be the first to know. And I'm so excited.
So Artist
to
Form
see.
Will be the first to drop. Of course.
I will give you that scoop. I will. And I'm very, very excited to see, you know, what it is. Like I said, I've been blessed with this big life. And I hope to continue, you know, walking in on this light and achieving Aww. Things that I want to achieve.
And we can't wait. We can't wait to see the journey unravel and open up. And for you, I think also you're probably going to go back on the road as soon as the globe opens up.
Absolutely. And that for sure will be happening.
I don't think your feet are going to touch the floor.
No. I hope not.
Thank you so much for gracing us on the sit down.
Thank you so much for having me, Olotu. And again, congratulations on this huge, huge thing that you have going on here. It's always so lovely for me to see women, especially Black women, you know, doing the most, as we say. And so I hope that this continues and becomes even larger than anything you've ever imagined it to be.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the Sit Down Lifestyle with Zozi. Oh, what a legend. Until next time. Listening to The Sit Down with Olwethu Lishabane, a podcast for women everywhere who are exploring the art of superwoman.